Hi there, and welcome to another episode of Horse Sense, a show for the thinking horse person. At Horse Sense, we give you practical, relevant, up-to-date, and even inspirational information to enrich your horsing life. This show is brought to you by the Equine Care Clinic, a clinic dedicated to the care of sick or injured horses when their owners aren't able to. Check out the site at equinecareclinic.com. I'm your host, Amanda Edwards, and this week we're talking to Lynn Blyton of The Fragile Puzzle. I ran into Lynn at a podcasting conference and we got talking. It was the week of the Melbourne Cup and Michelle Payne had just become the first female jockey to ever win that prestigious race. I found out that Lynn was one of the pioneers of women jockeys and I couldn't resist recording a chat. I really enjoyed this interview and I even had goosebumps, and I'm sure you're going to love it too. So the first question I'm going to ask you, Lynn, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How did you get to be a female jockey and what age were you when you started?
Actually, I never ever chose to be a female jockey.
There you go.
But I'm the firstborn girl with four brothers, all older.
Uh-huh.
And two of my brothers were jockeys in England with the point-to-points, and I was the bunny that had to exercise the horses in the morning.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And in those days, well, still today in England, you have to, for point-to-pointing, to qualify your horse, each horse has to go to the hunt 12 times.
Right.
So we had five horses, so that meant 60 hunts that somebody had to attend.
Okay, and so you get to do all that job.
I got to do all that job. I did the morning work, and sometimes I'd have to ride two horses at the hunt through the day to qualify them. And then my brothers fell off and broke bones, and we had five fit horses and no one to ride, and I was just told to get on and ride because I was fit, but I'd never been over a fence before and was too frightened to do the practice jump.
Oh, my goodness. So when you say point to point, explain to the listeners what that is.
Point to point is amateur steeplechasing. And so you have very heftily made brush fences.
Yep.
There can be open ditches, like two telegraph poles, a ditch and then a fence. There can be a water jump, so it's a big brush fence, not one that will collapse. It's one you could bash it with a tractor and it wouldn't bend.
Right.
So they're solid. And you have, say, 20 fences over 3.5 miles at full gallop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a pretty scary sort of a...
Well, yes, when you're frightened to do a practice jump.
And how old were you?
I was 19.
Yep, okay.
19 and 20 during those times. Yeah, my first jump, I was on a big 16 one-hand horse called Star Chance, and I just buried my hands in the mane, closed my eyes and prayed. but the enormity of that jump was so much that it put me into shock. So I'm actually sitting on that horse in shock, and the only thing that brought me out of shock was the fact another jump came up.
Wow.
I came third in that jump. There was 15 wow. riders and most of them fell.
Oh, my gosh. So you had a lot of faith in your horse then?
I just prayed.
A lot of faith in God.
just, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. So how long then did you continue? So you started racing then?
Yeah,
properly?
Well, yeah, we had, I rode two horses. I rode a little horse called Eastern Abbott that was 14.3.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so, and he was just an enormous jumper. He was fabulous, and I felt more secure on him than Star Chance. And, yeah, he was a really quite a... an incredible horse. We had another horse called The Survivor.
Who, aptly named, or maybe that should have been
well,
your name.
I wasn't actually allowed to ride her because she was a bit of a cow, but she would do five fences and then that was it. Nobody could get her to fence number six. But when she jumped, she landed three lengths ahead of all of the other horses. She was just an amazing horse. Yeah.
For five jumps.
So that was my entry into racing.
And so how many women were out there doing what you were doing at that time? And when was that? So just
that was 1966.
Right, yeah, so yeah. A little ways ago.
I do have some great pictures of me coming over jumps, but unfortunately the best one I've got with the best chance of winning, I fell. My horse actually jumped in the open ditch, jumped the two telegraph poles, but not the big brush fence, and we karate chopped it and opened it up at ground level, which upset everybody. But in those days, you had ladies-only races.
Right, okay.
And now they actually can compete in mixed races.
Yep.
And then when I came to Australia, I hadn't ridden for 8 years, and I went to Western Australia to my sister's wedding, and my brother had settled in Western Australia and was a number one leading trainer in Geraldton. And there was an international jockey, Chesky Tabats, from Singapore, doing an Australasian tour. And she rode all through New Zealand, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide. But when she came to Perth, women were absolutely not allowed on the race track.
Oh.
And so because Geraldton had a powder puff derby, they asked Geraldton to host her. They were because Perth wouldn't have her on the track, because and yet she was this brilliant jockey of world reclaim, international jockey. So she was given the choice of some pretty big named horses. I was on. I actually have my picture in the Pix People.
It's very very famous there, Lynn.
Yeah. So I actually beat her.
Wow.
So, and I, in the Pix People, they said I was riding a hay burner.
What's a hay burner?
Well, it's one that a horse that you know, it's just a not so good horse. So, that was, I'll think of his name in a minute. The hay burner was owned by my father and my sister-in-law. Kimber Mavandi was the horse.
Right, okay.
And Kimber had never won a race before, was an unknown, but had the ability. So my brother's wife was saying how they were the men were making this big thing. It was a stitched up deal. It was going to be a boat race, and I became angry. And I'm not very good when I become angry.
With four brothers, I get the feeling that you probably got a little bit of toughness there.
Yeah, you have to be tough to survive. So my brother said, put your money where your mouth is and get on a horse. But I hadn't ridden a horse for 8 years.
Goodness.
And I had, and I'd
had children by then?
Yes, I had children, and I'd had an operation in the February. This was on Melbourne Cup Day in 1975, I think. And I had 6 weeks to get fit. So I put in a package of swimming every day, badminton every day, disco every night, and
So you were like the precursor to Zumba classes, right?
Yes. So, but it was like high energy, and of course I was riding track work of a morning for 6 weeks. But I'd never, ever come out of a barrier or raced in a flat race. So
right.
I knew nothing of that. It was terrifying just to go in that little thing and be enclosed. And then and coming out of a barrier, it's a bit like that first jump. Your heart gets left behind.
Yeah.
It's like jumping on a train at full pelt, and it's like, boom, and you're gone. And it's really quite something to get used to.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever want to experience it, but I'm going to just imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's coming, and then boom, and then you're hanging on for grim death, and, you know. But what happened is the jockeys told me how to ride that race.
Yeah.
And they said, Lynn, your horse is like a mini minor up against a Ferrari, so you haven't got a hope in hell. So unless you can ride tactics, you're not going anywhere. So they said for me to place my horse on the... They said, if you've got the guts to ride the rail, well, I'm a jumps jockey. What the hell's a rail, you know?
Okay.
So they said, if you place your horse on her tail going round the home turn and stay there, she's going to go way ahead of the others, and then she's going to look round, and she's not going to see you because you'll be on her blind side, and she'll see the others and she'll stop riding. And that's exactly what happened.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was tactics. And, we can't say rude things, can we? But she, nearly lost it when she saw me come up the inside.
Yeah,
but, yeah.
Wow, it's kind of exciting to
listen to. It's very exciting race. It's absolutely amazing. It's kind of like in those last paces, it's like the universe all came together and I became one with the horse, and it was like we were all joined together and connected. But I nearly embarrassed myself because I was spent, just no more energy. And this horse had a habit of dropping his shoulder and losing you, so I was a little nervous of him.
Yeah.
But as we went round the next corner after the finish line, there was a whole flock of seagulls flew up, and he shied, and I nearly fell the shit off. So if I'd have fallen off, I'd have lost it. But then what happened is there was a big tussle about letting me win, and everybody was embarrassed because I'd beaten this international jockey, and they tried to get rid of the photo, and my brother had to go up there and make sure. It took 20 minutes to make a decision, but I won by half a nose.
Well done. Congratulations. How exciting. That is just...
That's my one racing story of great repute.
A great repute. Yes, well, I think that you've got to hang on to that. Have you still got that photo?
I do, and yes.
You've got to send me that photo for the podcast.
It was in the Pics People, you know. Yeah, what more do you need?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You were famous. That's your 15 seconds of fame, was it? How did it go after that?
It was, that's about it. Then after that, I went, because I came from Queensland, so I went back to Queensland because I was only there for my sister's wedding, and I thought, well, this could be interesting. And I looked for a trainer and got a job as a work rider in the mornings and sort of got back to horse riding like that.
Nice.
And I rode for a number one trainer in Brisbane, Merv Lewis.
Yep.
And did all of his slow track work. I did a little bit of fast track work at Doomben, and I think once at Eagle Farm, I'm not quite sure, but mainly at his track at home. I did the morning work and rode some pretty spectacular horses. Yeah, so that was lovely.
And you sort of, what's the thing that, like, you love about that experience and about riding horses?
Well, I turned 70 in 1 month's time, and when I get on my horse, I'm 16.
Yes.
And I become one with the horse. You stop thinking about everything. And what I'm trying to do now is I'd like to learn dressage because I'm what you call a rip shit and bust rider that was just shoved on horses and never really had a lesson.
I bet your balance is amazing, though.
Well, I've got an ugly posture, but my balance, you know, I don't fall off too easily.
Mm.
The horse can fall down on the ground and come back up, and I'll come back up with it.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, if a horse is trotting and just stops, it goes straight over its head.
Yeah. That's core body strength, isn't it, right there?
Yeah. So I had a big buster this year in May and broke some ribs. That is the first time. I started riding when I was 3. That's the first time in my riding career I've ever broken a bone. So,
oh my goodness, that's
you never
that's
know when
good.
It's coming. But and I've bounced back. I'm fine. And
So do you think too? Like that's I think one of the lovely things about horse riding or being involved with horses, you can kind of continue it. Right through. It's a sport for women, and it's a sport that women can do really well.
Yes.
And that men can enjoy as well. So it's not limited to gender. And
no.
And it can start. I was first on a horse at about 6 months old.
Yeah.
And, you know, riding since I was a little tacker.
Yeah.
And I just love the feeling of it and the smell of it.
Yes, exactly. Takes you into another place. And I was going to say, because I grew up in England, I've got lots of contacts over there. I have a friend who is a lady hunt master.
Oh, wow.
And runs an equestrian centre.
Is that unusual to have lady
hunt
masters?
Yeah, well, it is, but, yeah, she's quite an unusual lady.
Yes.
This lady has lived with rheumatoid arthritis all of her life, and she uses horse riding
to keep her moving
and fit. And she forces herself to get on, and she just keeps riding. She's an amazing woman.
And that's kind of, it does give you the freedom of mobility that you may not have as you get a little bit older. And so you've got to weigh that up against, if you do have a fall, it can be problematic. But
there's a lot of freedom, isn't there? Yeah. And the reason I raise that is because I sometimes go back to England and go hunting with them.
Wow.
If I stay with that lady, she gives me a horse, a car and a room. And it's great. And but the reason I'm saying that is that there's a lady over there who she's now 80 and she's still riding to the hounds, and she's my mentor.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So let's go a little bit controversial. I think one of the things, you've been involved in the racing industry, your brothers have been, your family, you've bred horses and race horses.
Yeah.
What do you say to the people that are very anti, or what do you think about the horse wastage, as they call it, and that sort of thing?
You mean horses that fall and get hurt and things
like
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think... I also don't like to see horses hurt, but I also know that a horse is a creature that loves to jump, and, you know, some of them don't, but some of them absolutely. I come back to my child's pony. Now, he was trained from early on to jump, and my son was 5 and too young to go in the cross country, and his little pony broke free of his moorings and just took off around the cross country by himself. So this to me is a little story that, the horse has his side as well. And it's not just a person on there forcing the horse to do what he's doing.
No, that's true, because as you say, many horses are not willing participants and
that's
they don't get to participate.
They don't get to participate because they you know, it's not what you can get out of them. So they usually drop out of the system. And the ones that are in there racing are usually loving it. And,
And so, you know, the other criticism would be around the people in racing, that they don't really care about horses. And I've seen lots of people in the racing industry that care very much about their horses. So what would you...
I'd have to say that, unfortunately, you've got both types of people in there, and probably the racing industry does need to work hard at making sure it's got people who do care.
Yes.
And, you know, there are people who would sit up all night with their horses and make sure that they're all really well looked after. And I think that's in any industry.
I think you're right, because, you know, there's a lot of criticism of that, and then I will see other horse industry types like showing, and in every discipline, dressage, we've seen the roll car and the, you know, that's got a significantly bad impact. Well researched, poor impact on horse. So I think, I guess it's at this time of year that the focus becomes on the racing industry.
Yes.
And the sheer numbers are pretty high. So there's, I think there's two sides to it.
Yes, there's a lot of sides. So I've seen lots of things in the racing industry, good and bad, but I think basically it's about being diligent and the authorities making sure that it's looked after. I think that the stuff around the Melbourne Cup and the using cobalt and stuff is all good stuff, but we don't understand so much that nowadays with technology it's quite complex.
Right, so when you're a rep... You would go around and you'd sort of sell Ranvet products, wasn't it? Or
I worked for Ranvet.
But you were, so of course the trainers would be saying to you, well, I came up positive with this.
Yeah, you'd hear all the inside stories and you'd see lots of inside stuff, and, you know, it was quite incredible education.
Yes.
And Ranvet was a wonderful company to work for. I didn't actually sell anything.
Yep.
I promoted to everybody, so my job was to create pull-through.
Yep.
So I'd go to wholesalers, vets, produce agencies, gallopers, trotters, studs. So it was a huge... And my territory was all of Queensland, northern New South Wales, and all of Western Australia by myself. So I think I was one of the first female reps that was ever out there doing that in those days.
And how did the trainers and people receive you, given you have quite a successful background in horse racing, really?
Yeah, well, the thing that made me most successful was I was quite used to getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I would actually go to work at the track, and they'd never seen a rep that ever came to the track. And I could talk their language, so,
So they just forgot you were a woman after all?
Yeah, yeah, because I've got 4 brothers, I kind of know how to mix with the boys as kind of like an equal, and, you know, it was never any trouble.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So one of the things, you obviously have quite a deep love of horses yourself, and what they mean to you, and in my world, you know, my thing is about looking after or actually empowering horse owners to be able to take care of their horses in a way that's, you know, horse-like.
Yes, yes.
Because we often do things that are very human-like.
Yes, yes, we forget.
Thinking that that's good for our horses, yes. And it's not. So what would be some of the key learnings you took out of all of that, that long history of looking after and caring for even the highest athletes of horses, right down to your riding horse now?
Yes. Well, I've recently done a course with Ken Faulkner, which was very interesting because he actually teaches you a different language. And my sister in Western Australia is a Pirelli instructor.
Right, okay.
So I'm sort of learning that there's other ways of communicating to a horse.
Yeah.
But basically to keep remembering that the horse is a herd animal.
Yes.
And this is an animal. It's not a toy.
Or a pet.
Or a pet. And,
well, it is a pet, but it's kind of like a pet. That's a 500 kilo pet.
Yeah,
often.
That's right. And look, I just lost my finger by doing something really stupid with my horse.
Lynn is actually poking up that finger at me, and I'm looking at the nice little bruise and the fingernail and missing tip. What did you do there, Lynn?
Well, it's quite embarrassing, really, for a horsewoman. It's not what you do, but I noticed my horse was eating his carrot a little strangely, and I thought, well, I've just had his teeth done. Have we got
you
some rough pet?
I did.
I stuck it right up the back of the gob and he crunched it.
Oh, very good.
And that wouldn't be his fault, would it?
Not really.
So it's quite embarrassing to tell people that after all these years. But it's also proof that you're dealing with an animal of instinct and you're not dealing with a toy.
And quite incredible power and strength.
Incredible power. I can tell you there's a grinding tooth. It's not a clamping tooth. And to have your finger clamp down and ground, yeah, it's reality check. And I think we need that with horses. We need to love them as our children, but understand they're not.
Yes.
And that they've got their world and we need to respect their world and we need to learn about how to communicate to them through their world.
Yes. I think that's a brilliant learning.
Yeah.
And if people can take away that,
yeah,
I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I think, is there anything else you would like to leave the listeners with?
Well, I'm not sure there. I think it's just been a wonderful opportunity to share my story through your podcast. And just to say that, you know, I hope I'm still on my horse when I'm 100. And and if you fall off and die, so what?
That's it. At least you died happy.
You died happy.
On that note, Lynn, I think you've got a few years ahead of you.
I think I have.
So thank you very much for being our guest today, and we really appreciate the time.
Well, what did you think of that? What a great lady. Three take-home messages I got from this interview were, number one, horse riding can give you mobility and freedom that you might no longer have on the ground. Number two, you're never too old to ride your horse, so don't give up just because you're getting older and there's an element of risk. It's been there all the time. Number three, there's always something new to learn with horses, and it doesn't matter how long you've been around them. I really hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. You can see pictures of Lynn winning that race in the show notes at horsesenseshow.com. If you like the show, please leave a comment on iTunes. I really appreciate it. Otherwise, I'm just sitting here talking to myself. For more great horse tips, follow me on our Facebook page, Equine Care Clinic. Until next time, may your horsing be great horsing, and goodbye.